Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. What are you drinking, Paul? Are you drinking tea or beer?
Tea. I haven't had my dinner yet. I can't drink on an empty stomach because it'll surprise your viewers, but I get a bit leery.
I think you should do it. It will make good television. Yeah. All right, well, cheers, everybody. Cheers, Paul. Cheers, Nick. Cheers, Lipton. Cheers, Tommy. Cheers, resident poet. Cheers, can't remember. 2 p.m. New York, indeed. And hello, 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 and welcome, good evening, and well, for Avon, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are online public house on Monday, 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, in which we discuss based science and all kinds of stuff that is expanded and what's in the news and all kinds of stuff that's expanded from our woke joke universities. So, cheers, everybody, and Hurg and Gerligan, and K-Piss, and Salou, and Saludo, and Proust, and Prost, and Turbo Sexy, and Yakidar and Slanger and Slangervar and Soupy Twists, as Jimmy Godfrey referenced to Fry and Laurie in the 1990s there when comedy was funny, and when Stephen Fry was doing actual comedy rather than pederasty. So cheers to that, and cheers, everybody, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We have a very special guest today. I'm going to ask to say hello. He's been interviewed on the channel before, and I've been on his channel, and that is my friend, Mr. Nick Dixon. Nick, say hello.
Hello. How you doing? Good to be here.
That's Nick Dixon there. Nick, I'll let you into a little secret. He's Northern. So that means half of us on the panel are Northern. Paul from Liverpool, obviously, and Nick from further north, from Westmorland, I believe. Westmorland.
Yes, right? Now Cumbria, A up Lallan, Nout. All the things you want me to say. Just been eating a pie. Slightly late because my pie was too hot and it burnt my mouth and I was waiting for it to cool down. And I had to also go down the mines briefly.
That is what they
we
do.
We had a kid at school we called. Did I mention this, Ed? We had a kid at school called Hot Chip.
What was that?
He was permanently, you know, one of these open mouth people. His face normally was. We called him Hot Chip, like he was trying to cool down a hot chip.
We had a kid at school that was famous for the fact that in the canteen, he would buy, the school had like a proper, like a canteen where you give money and then you buy whatever you like unhealthy food, and it was the 90s. So he would buy chips, and then whenever he bought the chips, everybody would grab in to get a fistful of his chips that he'd bought. So what he would do is quite openly, he made sure everyone could see, he would buy the chips and then gob on them.
My mum would bring back cream cakes, so you all had to gob on the one you wanted to stop anyone else getting it.
Yeah, that we had that at school.
I thought this was a dumb thing.
We'd say he's grabbed on it, and that meant you couldn't touch it. He's grabbed on it.
he's marked his territory. Interestingly, that guy's name was Philip Crisp, so there was some kind of nominative determinism with this interesting potato-based product there. hello if you're watching. But such was life in the 90s. Oh God. You could buy whatever yes.
And I ate biscuits. I had an assortment of biscuits recently. Four. One was one was chocolate biscuit, one was shortcake biscuit, the other one was biscuit with cream. I can't remember the fourth biscuit now. Oh, nice biscuit. One was called nice biscuit.
With regard to you were telling me earlier that you wanted to talk about tonight, Lipton, but those biscuits, they sound mighty fine. They sound mighty fine biscuits. You won.
Ed, why are you doing a Birmingham? Why are you doing a Birmingham drumming accent?
And that is also what has to happen. I was actually doing an impression of Lipton last night to my wife, and then I did an impression of you saying that. Why are you doing an impression of Lipton with a Welsh accent? such is life. But we need to be serious here. Remember, we need to be serious. Remember the rule. We need to be serious and keep on topic and so forth. And so the first topic
Nick
I was going
started
to
started it.
Nick is inherently being a sometime comedian, I guess. I was going to say he's inherently unserious, but I guess you have to be serious and even slightly wounded to be that unserious.
Well, I've also done 3 years on GB News, professional television, now called Reform TV. But I did 3 tough years on live TV, Ed. So yeah, I'll check you for any Ofcom regulation, and I'll provide balance and neutrality if needed.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, we like to be balanced and neutral here on the Jolly Heretic.
Yeah, I've noticed that about your shows.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so we're ethnically representative. We have that.
We've got Northerners.
Sorry, our Northerners. Yeah, we have.
Oh, I thought that's what you meant when you said we're ethnically represented.
Well, yeah, that as well. I mean, I suppose they're from Liverpool. They're essentially Irish. So we're ethnically representative. We're not sexually representative. We're not.
You're bisexual.
Oh, right. Yes, that must be it. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm female. I was actually born female. So we're representative in that way. Good. My impression of an autistic professor is spot on, says Tree Goblin 69. Well, thank you very much, sir. That's very kind of you. I try my best. And I'm wearing my summer, the clocks have changed. Now, dogs. I want to talk about dogs. Paul, you have some dogs. I had a wonderful dog when I was a child. Nick, did you have a dog?
I certainly did, yeah.
And the BBC have just put out something today saying that there need to be less dogs, fewer dogs, and less access for dogs, and dogs are a problem. I find this, considering dogs have been our evolutionary allies in what is that noise? Is that my?
Did they give a reason why?
No, that what is that?
Yeah, that's terrible. That noise,
awful.
That is objectively awful.
I think it's Lipton.
That's not me, is it? That's not my microphone. Let me just check. Oh, shut up! Right, okay. I think you might stop now. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it seems to have stopped. It definitely was you. Now you've muted yourself as the host, which is a bold move.
Turn off the anal beads.
Okay, now can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Yes. Right, sorry, okay, that was something to do
with vibrating has stopped.
I think dogs have been our evolutionary allies for all of this time, since 410. And the idea that the National Broadcaster is saying that there should be fewer of them and they should have less access, I find amazing. I mean, people online saying, why are they allowed in pubs? Why are they allowed in, you know, they shouldn't be allowed in parks. They shouldn't be allowed in anywhere. I think dogs are our allies, Paul.
Well, but did they give any reasons why all of a sudden? Hey.
No, they didn't give any reasons, but I think that it's fairly obvious why. There is a certain... Yeah. Like for them to say we should.
I thought we were going to use some euphemisms. We've just come out and said it. I thought we were going to stick with euphemisms. I'm used to TV.
But actually, no. To be serious for a second, I've got two Staffordshire Bull Terriers, and the problem is they actually like people. So I was thinking, given current developments, I might buy a Malinois. You know, the Belgian ones. They're not very big, but my God, they're psychos on four legs, and they don't like anyone. If you told a Malinois to attack someone, they would with gusto. Mm. So maybe we all need, as a counterweight to the bee, we all need to go out and buy a Malinois.
Well, I don't even know what they look like, to be honest. What kind of dog is this?
It's a Belgian police dog. If you ever see little police dogs in Belgium, and they use them in America as well.
Okay, well, maybe we do. But at the moment, we have nice dogs in England, like Springer Spaniels. And
that was my dog.
Get real. Got to move on.
I also had a Springer Spaniel, Nick. They were lovely.
See, we're the same. We're the same, Ed.
They're
very similar.
Dogs.
So we had a Springer Spaniel, and on that note, I actually had a dream about him quite recently, and that just gives you an idea. My dog died sort of about a quarter of a century ago, and he'll still appear in my dream, and I say this to convey our love of dogs. And what we have now is a situation where we have one group, which is the group that was here first, who love dogs more than almost any other country. And we have a problem where other cultures either think dogs are vermin to be despised or food. And the problem is those three can't coexist. Only one of these can triumph. There is no compromise between those positions. And this is the problem with multiculturalism. So something has to lose, you see. And in the report from the BBC, they say we have 13.5 million pet dogs in the country. They admit we're a dog-loving country. 36% of households own at least one, apparently. And if you look at the population of certain other groups that Lipton mentioned, there's only around 4 million as of 2021. So the dogs win it on the sheer numbers. So this is my problem with multiculturalism. If you take, for example, the Michaela School, which all our sort of liberal CivNat friends hail as the great triumph, what did they do? They banned meat eating because they said, right, we've got this group. We can't agree. So we're just going to get rid of meat entirely. But that's pandering to the lowest common denominator. And that's not having your own culture. So similarly with dogs, what are we going to do? Just have no dogs or put them in certain places or ban them from somewhere? So you see, this is the battle of multiculturalism. It can only ever be.
You know the Michaela School. You know the Michaela School, right?
I do. I just mentioned it.
I hate that. That really fecks me off. When I've been to ARC, on the two occasions I've been to that ARC thing, she's always there talking.
Really?
My reaction is I agree with Colin Tomlinson, who spoke to. I don't like her score. I don't like score. Partly because of that as well. Oh, we're all disagreeing of whether food can be halal or haram or whatever, and so we just have to eat vegetarian food. No, bollocks. If you're inculcating these people with Englishness, they eat pork.
Yeah, her school is obviously, and she always takes offence because she says, well, look at our grades, look at our discipline. Yes, undoubtedly. But what it is a sort of bleak, dystopian vision of the future of multicultural Britain, where there's no native English people there. It's just different cultures getting high grades and reciting Kipling. And as I discussed with Pete North, not everyone's favourite at the moment, but as I discussed with Pete North on my podcast, how does that help? That's a further insult to the native population, because it's just saying we're actually receiving a better education in your history than many of the native children are, because famously white Brits are struggling, least likely to go to university and so on. Poor white British kids are the least likely to go to university of any demographic. Go on.
I was just going to make an incredibly important point about, I disagree on the issue about pork. I think traditional English school, as it's school food, as it's historically been known, is always being completely unidentifiable meat. So to specify we have to have pork at school is against all English traditions. It has to be completely unidentifiable, only identifiable as meat, but of no known provenance. And
that's true.
How English children have been brought up.
That's true. I once had a school dinner in about 1988, and it was some kind of pie. And I don't know what, to this day, I don't know what was in it. It was some kind of green ooze.
Mystery meat.
And even though we were supposed to finish our plates, I just refused. I said, this is going to make me sick. And I said to the dinner lady, you know, I can't eat this. And she was very, very sympathetic about it. But yeah, I think that Michaela should get the Michaela's school, whatever her name is, Miss Snuffy, whatever her stupid name is.
Verbal thing.
What do you mean she was sympathetic? Why weren't you expelled on the spot?
No, she was one of the more liberal.
Well, this is where the wokeness started. You can't be anti-woke and then refuse to eat the food you don't know its origin.
Ed, you said that we're going to stick to the issue, and I agree. I really enjoy Nick. Nick is such an eloquent guy.
Thank you.
But there's one issue, however. Yes.
Oh, there's a book coming. I said thank you too soon.
Yes.
It's a big butt.
There's one issue, Ed.
Big butt.
I read some time ago that in some communities in London, it is being said that Muslims don't like dogs, and that's a problem. So other people should try to facilitate Muslims because they don't like dogs, and that's okay. I don't like dogs any at all, but when I'm the British people, they love dogs, and whenever I see a dog, I just go into the other direction. I think the Muslims can follow my line of reasoning. Secondly, Muslims in the UK have too much say for a group that historically is often a net user of welfare. So I don't know why people listen to them. Like, I'm speaking reality. So there is this professor called Ephraim Karsh. I've read him and I've read other people. And historically, Muslims, whenever they conquer a place, they tend to impose tributes on the conquered people. They're not overly productive.
No. I mean, dogs aren't overly productive either.
But what's being dependent upon benefits got to do with? It strikes me that this is the method that the Democrats use in the States. You create a client base. So across America, there are huge client bases of people on welfare, and they've always voted Democrat, and that's what's happening in the UK now.
No, my point is that for a group that is so low, they're not really productive. So why are we listening to them?
It's a great point.
Because they're evoking voting block.
That's one reason. Another reason is people are scared and they like the Batley grammar teacher. But yeah, in general, they're voting block. Just to add something as well, Lipton says he just doesn't like dogs, so personally deals with it. I've never had allergies. Like, one of the things cited in the BBC piece was allergies. And I've actually barely had an allergy to anything, but I did go around my friend's house. And it's kind of one of these big chaotic houses with lots of kids. And they got this new dog, and it's not particularly clean, the house. So there's like dog hair. It's jumping up on the sofa. I actually did suddenly have really bad allergies with that one dog. And it was also barking really loudly every few seconds. I just didn't go around again. I was like, that's how I'm going to deal with it. So my point is, you can't change the whole culture. It's a bit like nut allergies. I went out with a girl who had an extreme nut allergy. And if she wasn't very hot, it would have been not worth it because it was so annoying because she had such extreme nut allergy that she couldn't eat anything ever. And every time you went to a restaurant, it was a 20-minute interview, I'm not joking, with the waiter. And what's that been made in? What's the oil? And all. But to be fair, she could have died. So, but the problem is society, and I was amazed how blasé everyone was. They're like, oh, I think, I'm not sure, actually. Maybe it's going to kill you. They were quite blasé about it, and it must have been very hard. But my point is, you can't therefore adapt. We still have nuts. And so you can't adapt to these people. If someone's allergic to a dog, you can't adapt the whole society.
They love their peanut oil, these Muslims. There have been so many cases.
That's how they're fighting back.
Muslims cooking things in peanut oil and not advertising it, and people getting seriously ill and even dying as a consequence. That happened to a woman I knew, when I was a first year at university. It's the year 2000. And she goes out for a curry. It was the first day after the new term, January 2000. And she goes out for a curry with her friends. And she hasn't had an allergic reaction for years and years and years. So she's left her EpiPen in a college, in St. Mary's College, which is the other side of the small town that is Durham. And so she's at this place called Rajputh, it's called. And she has a little bit of a curry. And then she starts to get ill. A boyfriend who was at my college starts walking her home, and she gets to the student union and then collapses and dies.
Wow.
It's not a funny story.
No, it makes me feel bad for my story now.
It's interesting that she was quite good looking.
But if you're going to take it there, you're going to say, well, why should the Muslims be able to make things with nuts then? We could say, right, nuts are too dangerous, that's gone. But yes, so it's a decent example. We can't, and the society is, of course, a rough compromise. There's lots of things about it I don't like. I mean, I could list them. I mean, it sort of makes you think of the music in public spaces, another one that we don't do here, where other cultures who come in don't own headphones, apparently. So that's another one. But we say we can't do this in a public space. So there's all these compromises in a society, but it should be obviously the host population, the native population, whatever you want to call it, that gets to decide.
Yeah, I can see their point, but then when you think about it, I see that point, I understand that. Yeah, but then when I was at university in my second year, we had to live out of college, and I moved in with these evangelical Christian friends of mine, and they had all these like rules. Like no smoking in the house. At the time, I smoked a pipe occasionally, pretentiously. And it was always pretentiously.
No fornicating on a Thursday.
No fornicating on a Thursday, exactly. You know, no frigging on a Friday, whatever, right? These rules. And first I accepted them. I kind of said, well, yeah, okay, fair enough. You know, you invited me to live with you because I split up with my girlfriend. So fair enough. But then as I got there, I started thinking, well, hang on a minute. I pay just as much rent as everybody else. Surely I should have a say in how it works here. So I will smoke shaving the tobacco in my bedroom. That's going to happen. And I won't clean once a week. And so on. I eventually got my evangelical friends, my friend Susanna's house cleaning rota that she drew up for all five of us, and I ate it in front of three of my housemates to great hilarity from them. It was like a revolution. I overthrew her.
It's not that you derail against rules and conventions, Ed, in an obnoxious fashion. That's nothing like that.
I'd have made the rota out of peanut oil.
Which fortunately I'm not allergic to, but anyway.
I'm actually with the Christians. One, you should have been Christian, and two, you shouldn't have been smoking inside. Even though Tolkien smoked a pipe, which is a point in your favour, but smoking is disgusting. So I'm with them. They should have kicked you out.
Pipe smokers.
Nick, if someone else smokes that and you walk into the room, they are doing you a favour. I mean, they're risking cancer so you can have a wonderful, congenial aroma.
No, I mean, it's horrible. It's secondhand smoke and it's very dangerous. See, this is the one area where I'm a total fascist and I'm a total kind of progressive Starmer scumbag. I would just ban smoking. I just hate it. It's the one area I'm like, just totally go against all
the
principles.
But Nick, you can't pick and choose. If you become a bit wokey and interventionist, other wokey interventionist people just have a different set of preferences. It should basically be, Ed, you should clip this bit. It should be a Darwinian free-for-all. That gets rid of the allergies, because that's just Darwin's way of saying you've survived too long as it is. And we need to move on and be a strong Spartan nation.
Well, yeah, you're preaching to the choir there, because this whole thing is avoiding dysgenic. So you're saying it's dysgenic to allow these nut people
It's slightly more complicated than dysgenic. It's that the immune system hasn't been properly exposed as it would have been historically. That's a bigger part of it. So hay fever only started...
Yeah, but part of it's because of nut avoidance. There was a paper, Ed, that was... Yeah, because they've over-avoided nuts, and that this created more and more allergies.
Yeah, so hay fever basically didn't exist until about the 1870s. There was no hay fever. It just didn't exist. And then people started noticing, because of course all these people have been brought up in cities and stuff.
They're still quite weak, I think. I grew up in a country, I didn't have hay fever. It's quite weak, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite weak, but it's still more than zero. And then nut allergies, that only started to manifest really in the early 90s. Nobody had nut allergies. Nobody talked about nut allergies.
You could solve that. You could absolutely overnight, though. You force feed babies in maternity units on nuts. The surviving kids don't have a problem for the rest of their lives. And we all move on.
Yeah, just move on. Like with this dogs thing as well, I think we just get the dogs, get all of our 30 million dogs, let them loose on the streets and just see who wins.
And by the way, it's also...
Yeah, you two like Springer Spaniels. You're not going to achieve anything. You've got to go down the Malinois route. I'm telling you.
That seems very sort of a bit racist. I mean, what's wrong with the Springer Spaniel? Springer Spaniel is a beloved English dog. No one even knows
exactly,
what your other dog
but they're
is.
They're not going to scare anyone, are they?
Did you say it was Belgian? Sounds like an immigrant to me.
It's a Belgian police dog. And there's footage in America they use them. There was some bloke I was in a car refusing to get out of a 4x4. So they smashed the window, sent the dog in. And all you can hear is this like 17-stone bloke screaming like an 8-year-old girl to get the dog off him. I watched that, you know, secret. That's the type of thing I watch at night to cheer myself up.
Yeah. On the video the other day, someone just showed a dog a tiny thing. Was it like a pencil or something? They showed him something tiny. They gave him the scent. They chucked it into a field. And after a while, he found it. It was incredible. Dogs are incredible. Hey, that's what they're trying to take away from you, Ed.
Well, I'm just going to say, my dog, my Springer Spaniel, when my mum had meningitis in Christmas Eve 89, he was going mad, jumping up at her and smelling her and then running over to my dad and barking at him. And then she just thought she had flu and went to bed with flu. And then, of course, she had meningitis and he could smell that.
Wow.
So he was an amazing bloke. And the only person he ever went for, he didn't bite her, but he tried to bite her, was my school art teacher, who was this miserable, humourless, boring Irish woman. And I hated her, and everyone hated her. And that was the only person he looked at her, and she held out her hand to sort of let him smell it, and he went for it. He could tell she was a bitch.
And can I add one further thing? Being from the countryside, have you noticed this assault on the countryside lately, and specifically on the indigenous population? Yeah, and we've got to ethnically cleanse the countryside, they're telling us. And tied in with that is the love of dogs. Go on.
Yeah, we had this conversation last week about the countryside. And all of us, I was born in a developing country. When you are in a developing country, the countryside is not elite. People from developing countries, when they migrate to the UK, they want to live in London or somewhere fancy. The countryside is not for people from the non-West. They don't value country leisure. They think that the country is for old, retired people or people who are poor. So obviously, even in a diverse society, in the countryside, it will be predominantly white, because whites are the natives and they're more accustomed to living in rural areas. They might like nature. So the obsession with nature is really a Western issue. The fetish for the environment outside of the West, people don't have a fetish for the environment. So the whites, they are more inclined to enjoy the countryside.
It's not safe.
Fetish is a weird word. That's the only thing I objected. It was a good analysis, but fetish, how can it be a fetish for like what's so natural? But yeah, I'm with you. I'm up till there. But also where I'm from, it's not an elite thing. It's a lot of working class thing. Joiners and plumbers and things, and more people have moved in now who are sort of Lib Dems who moved there later. And actually Lee Childs has moved there, the Jack Reacher writer. He got that name from Asda. He was in Asda, Kendall in Asda, and his wife, he was always reaching for things, and his wife said, if you don't make it as a writer, you can make it as a reacher, apparently. Anyway, so
I once went to a nightclub in Kendall called Crystals.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. Yeah, that's where I was born, Kendall. But yeah, Lipton's right. Although I think
that's how Ed got his nickname, the Groper.
Jack Isn't Groper. Mad. Ed Groper. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that. Is that Samuel Beckett, by the way, before I move on?
Yeah.
Which is that the Big collection fun. Of the novels or?
It's a collection of his, all this stuff.
All those unreadable novels. All right. Just a pointless shot at Beckett there. I don't know why I did that. Well, I like the plays more than the novels. But anyway, sorry.
I don't. I saw Not I once that played Not I, and I just thought, what the fuck is this?
I saw Crap's Last Tape with John Hurt.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
But
sorry, don't you think don't you think Not I is a bit like this Monday night performance?
No, because there's a sense in which this makes rough sense.
Not I is less stream of consciousness, more so on topic.
Mouth accidentally admits he can't read. I've got an MA in literature, you freak. Sorry.
A mouth doing a mental breakdown, and then someone occasionally saying, "What? I know he," or something, and then some wings flapping.
Right. And are you genuinely claiming that's less coherent than an average Monday night on the Jolly Heretic?
Well, you have to take 25% of the responsibility for that lack of coherence, Paul. And more, if anything, because you're quite a dominant personality. So I would go so far as saying 50%, while me and Lipton take 25%. So I don't think that is, you know, if you want to go down that road, then yeah, it is more coherent. You're right. And there's a reason for that. A kind of bearded Liverpudlian gnome of a reason in the top corner.
I have a problem, and yes. I'm going to share it with you because you're a guest, Nick.
Okay.
I don't believe that I should be able to vote in an election in the UK. I can vote, but that is just infeasible and stupid. In order to vote, you should at least be a citizen. It's not enough to be on a work permit or have an indefinite leave to remain. You should be a legal citizen to vote.
Yeah, well, I don't know your exact status, but we still have Commonwealth citizens that can vote. Which
I know. I'm also familiar with that concept. But the only people who should vote in the UK are British citizens, not Commonwealth citizens, and not people on work permit.
Absolutely, I think, and specifically men over 30 with property. Sorry, I'd go on.
Exactly.
I think that this idea that British citizens should be allowed to vote is a bit extreme.
Only citizens should vote.
He's a liberal. He's a egalitarian guy here. Yeah, obviously, it'd be men over 30.
First of all, women voting, what's that given us?
Insanity.
Right. Even Mrs. Thatcher didn't think women should be allowed to vote. She told that to that Polish politician I interviewed, whatever his name was.
I'd love it if the Prime Minister couldn't vote. That would be
what was his name? That Polish member of parliament, Corvin Vik. That's his surname. I think it's Janusz Corvin Vik. And he told me that the women shouldn't be allowed to vote because that was her view. I'm sure she had her reasons. So that's out. And then obviously, if they don't work, if they don't pay tax, surely that's out. And so I'm going for Nick's idea. I'm over 30, propertied.
Nick,
I agree. In the UK, let me see, around nearly 3 years now. And I'm going to be honest, nothing is wrong with being affable. You should treat people with respect, but the respect that's given to immigrants is just too much. Even in my case, it's just too much.
Yeah, well, I'm glad we agree.
Can I give you a mild example before Lipton gets the video taken down? I'm from an Irish background, but in the Brexit vote on votes like that, Irish citizens were allowed to vote who lived in Britain, which is fine, except all they ever do is moan about Britain and England and, you know, patriarchal, blah-de-blah, colonialism, blah-blah-blah. And it's like, well, as our Irish people in the UK, they've been treated incredibly well, considering.
Yeah. One thing I've noticed that Restore Britain has started... Oh, no, it was Michael Rayners I was talking to about this. People are starting to be aware that it's actually really hard to get a spouse visa. I once looked into it. It was harder for me to get a spouse visa than it was for a Swedish person in this country, because he had rights under the EU or something. That was absolutely bizarre. But yeah, obviously, no one who not from here should be voting. That's completely obvious. People are amazed when they find out Commonwealth citizens can vote. And the property thing, someone's asking me in the chat, well, that's just because that was the rule before First World War, and it was just a way of saying you have to have a stake in society. But, you know, we can discuss the property thing. But I think 30 is reasonable. Remember, the prefrontal cortex doesn't even develop till 25. So I think 30 is reasonable. Obviously not women. Any culture that doesn't have the death penalty and has women voting is an insane asylum, just insanity. If you don't have the death penalty and you have women voting, you don't have a society, you just have chaos.
No, and it was women. It was women.
Satire, by the way.
With this film the other day with him out of, what's his name, Ethan Hawke, this film. And it was about the Stockholm Syndrome. It was about the Stockholm Syndrome.
What's a film?
Film is how the Irish say film. And it was this bank robbery in the early 70s. And for some reason, they made out it was an American that was involved, which I don't think it was. And the women involved fell in love with their captors. It was a hostage situation, and the women involved fell in love with their captors. Because of the nature of Stockholm syndrome, i.e., in order to cope with the difficult situation, you force yourself to have positive feelings for the captor so that you're nice to him and he doesn't kill you. B, because in that situation they're attracted to high status, and of course the person with the status is the robber. And C, the extension of that is you get this, is it called histophilia, where you get women that are literally sexually attracted to mass murderers. Like Jeffrey Dahmer got loads of love letters when he was first banged up.
Yeah, and Ted Bundy. Fistophilia. Ted Bundy had loads.
Histophilia, or something like that. It's something like that.
I thought you said fistophilia.
No, that's
Ted Bundy. Even right at the end, Ted Bundy had it like girlfriends going, I think he's all right. Like, it's like he's admitting it. Like all the evidence is there. It's like, oh, I think he's misunderstood. It's like, what's wrong with you? A vaguely good-looking serial killer.
You
have to spell it, because what I'm seeing here is the biological attraction to the nostalgia of past history, so maybe I'm not hearing you properly.
Listen, careful how you spell it. It'll come up on your search record.
Yeah, be careful putting that on. I'm surprised you could even put in hibristophilia in the UK, considering these rules they have these days that you have to sign in. Did you have to sign in for the hibristophilia porn? In the UK, is that how it works? You sign in, there's all these naked murderers. And so you sign in, there's Myra Hindley naked and Ian Brady in a thong. And you...
What have I been invited to here? They didn't tell me it was going to be like this. I was told it was news. I was told it was a newsman doing a news show.
We try.
Professional newsman.
It is. No, it is. This is news. Now, where were we? Let's get back
Nick,
on topic.
Before Ed goes on, can I ask you, because you don't want women to vote, do you think we should reintroduce pond-based trials?
How does that work? What do you mean, like witch trials?
Yeah, because I'm thinking David Lammy's trying to get the backlog down. But if they sink, they're innocent. If they survive, they need hanging.
It was a great system, you know? Like, it's an efficient system.
Well, that'd get rid of the backlog.
And there are witches, aren't there? We've got all these witches who are always like, you're always like around. No, they're always trying to curse Trump and stuff, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, you could also just introduce it in the legal system. It doesn't have to be gender specific.
So you're saying non-witches, but just in general.
Yeah, because you could escape prosecution by claiming to be non-binary. You don't want that.
No. Yeah, I mean, look, I'm up for it. I mean, I've talked to Carl Benjamin about this. He wants to bring back flogging. I'm saying stocks for like shoplifting, flogging for something more major, all the way up to death penalty. We have retributive justice as a rule, right? Now, on a Lotus Eaters Lads Hour, I basically can't say this on YouTube, but I'll find a way around it. With retributive justice, obviously you're trying to match the crime, right? But with certain crimes, there's one beginning with R that I can't say on YouTube that gangs like to do in this country. With certain ones, you can't therefore do that to a person without losing your soul and compromising yourself, right? And being in sin, you can't do the R word to someone who's done the R word. So we came up with a gang of dolphins that would do it as a retributive system. This was a lad's hour. This is a purely hypothetical, but I'm basically for retributive justice where possible. So you do something
that flogging. But flogging wouldn't work because you just get really pathologically psychotic masochists deliberately committing crime.
That is a good point. And what crime have they done that they deserve to be flogged for? That's not completely retributive. But I think it's a good system. I was watching, sorry to digress, I was watching The Bounty recently because I'm interested in Captain Bly, who he made that incredible escape. But apparently until that movie with Anthony Hopkins, Bly was sort of the enemy according to Hollywood. And that movie sort of makes him the hero somewhat, or quasi the hero. And apparently he's misrepresented, and actually he was quite mild. And it said that he flogged where others would have hung, and he let people off where others would have flogged. And I thought, but the central point is we should run the country like a ship in the era of Bly. People should wear full uniforms on tropical islands. They should be flogged. They should be hung, because that's the only way you can have a society.
Well, that was when we were on the
up.
At that point, we were in the summer of civilization. We hadn't transferred over into the autumn yet. Once we industrialised, we were in the autumn. So we were on the up.
Ed, can I nominate you? And Ed, I want to nominate you as the cabin boy.
No, I'm perfectly
new
happy.
Ship
to be
of state.
Either the captain or the lieutenant. I think Lipton would make a good captain.
You're the cabin boy. Come on.
1789. That those were the days. And they say when, what is it, when ships were made of wood, men were made of steel. That's what we need to get back to, you, Ed. Floggings, yeah. Hangings.
No, I agree. And also, if you look at the, I watched a documentary about this. It was quite interesting. This guy, this Finnish psychologist, diagnosed Fletcher Christian as having borderline personality disorder, which is much more common among women. But that he would idealize. So you see that a big part of what happened was that he hero worshipped Bligh. He thought Bligh was the best person ever, and then he de-idealized him and therefore hated him. And then he went into paranoid psychosis and basically went mad. Which is what they do, these BPD people, and then took over the ship, and then it was all that. So actually, Bligh was just very, very bad with people. I mean, there was some kind of mutiny against him when he was ruling. He was a governor of Australia or New Zealand or somewhere.
Well, after a couple of yeah, I'm surprised you've got a reductionist scientific explanation, but can I just say, that's just a little joke. But yeah, you know, he did go mad. It did seem like, and in the film... In the film, he's played by Mel Gibson, sort of a young Mel Gibson, who's, you know, great charisma. But yeah, the film tries to, Gibson pointed out later, the film tries to balance it and have them both as a hero, which doesn't quite work. But clearly, Bligh was the hero. Fletcher Christian, he just went native. He just met some native girl, went mental, and tried to mutiny. And the mutineers, you can tell in the film, it's like, they're not good people. Sorry, this is a digression here, but Bligh, basically, they say about Bligh, he was not as strict as people say, but he just was didn't suffer fools, and he was a bit blunt.
Yeah, they say
about you, Ed.
And they say this about Winston Churchill's headmaster as well. I've tried to revive his reputation with my book, Churchill's Headmaster, The Sailors Nearly Saved the British Empire. He was nowhere like as strict as people say, like Boris Johnson or whatever say, in their very badly researched biographies of Churchill that just use secondary sources and don't bother to do any proper research at all. And they just say, oh, hey, he's this sick pervert. Well, if he's a sick pervert, if he's this evil pervert, then there were a lot of headmasters that were far worse than him. He used to take them on the best school trips you could imagine. Really amazing school trips. And they all loved him and thought he was great. Yes, there was flogging. But you've got to take the rough with the smooth in those days at prep, at what was the most expensive prep school in the country at the time. So, you know, that's the thing. Yeah, Bligh probably wasn't as bad. Oh, I'm nice, sir. You know, damn your eyes, blast your eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Oh,
great performance. Hopkins, one of the greats. Every performance, he brings out the pathos and the empathy. Even the painter, when he played the painter, there was a vulnerability there. Don't need to get into it on YouTube, but he played an Austrian
pirate impressions with Nick and Ed.
When he played with Olivia Colman about a man that has Alzheimer's. Oh, he really brought out the poignancy of Alzheimer's. Before that, I just thought it was funny. But watching that,
Shadowlands as well, playing C.S. Lewis. It wasn't really much like Lewis, but it is a brilliant film. Lewis, of course, had a big booming voice and was quite bombastic. He's quite diffident in that film, but still a great film. Anyway, sorry. Get back to the news.
You're misusing the word bombastic.
It's
there,
like Nick's movie reminiscences.
Bombastic is a glib.
No, it's bombastic. Good.
Let me check.
We never stick on topic.
I mean, that is the point of it. That's what our...
No. Speech or writing that is pompous, inflated and high-sounding but lacks substance. Okay, yeah, that's not Lewis. Yeah, you're right.
But unless you're not a fan of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, Nick, unless you think The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe with the Screwtape Letters is shit.
I'm one of the biggest Lewis fans. I've done like 5 videos on Lewis now on my channel, which everyone can check out. They're very good.
They are very good.
People tell me they are
very good, has to be said.
All the personalities tell you, Nick.
Yeah, you're
many people say they're good. They've watched my C.S. Lewis, they say he's maybe the best. They're talking about
China. Donald Trump. So,
weird thing to be the best at. They said he couldn't do it, but he did it. He talked about C.S. Lewis in one of the most successful ways.
I love that rendition of Trump. And I love Trump in real life.
Lipton, have you seen Nick's Jordan Peterson? No, that's his best one. It's Jordan Peterson.
No. Jordan Peterson?
Turns out to be a pretty complicated question. I haven't done it for quite a while, but that's the only one that I officially count as a proper impression. And you might say, well, you can't do it now because he's ill and his daughter's trying to poison him. Is that on the internet? Oh, no.
Ed,
satirical
said,
content.
When you
and
said
it's not Michaela, obvious. Sorry.
Were you referring to Jordan Peterson's daughter, Michaela?
No, that was satire. I didn't say that.
Can you do the Jordan Peterson, and Ed can do his normal Kathy Newman impression, and it'd be really, it'd work really well.
Does he do Kathy Newman?
No.
Yeah, he constantly misunderstands what's being said every week.
All that's going to be is, so what you're saying is we should be like lobsters. I mean, that's going to be the Kathy Newman impression.
No, I think that's silly. I really do.
So what you're saying
what?
Well, and then you have to, if you really want to do it properly, you have to say it's about the men working on the infrastructure. And when I think about all the men in high-vis jackets late at night working on the phone lines, I get emotional because nobody's grateful. And it's bloody obvious that they're keeping the society going. And the feminists don't care. Sorry.
Yes. Okay. We'll return to the Louis Bremner show after the intermission. We're about halfway through. So for those of you new, hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We're, of course, an online public house. It's on Mondays, 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York. We'll discuss based science, Spanish on work, joke universities, stuff to the news, and increasingly do impressions of people. If you're new, would you please subscribe? Could you subscribe on YouTube and leave a like and hit the bell button and leave a comment and all that kind of stuff for the algorithm? And could you also subscribe on my Substack? That's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most based on on YouTube, in-person interviews, blogs, films I make eventually, hopefully, in-person interviews. And if you like what I do, support the cost of a pint of beer a month. Next to me, we have Dr. Paul Taylor, Big Ange for PM, Dr. Paul Taylor. And he has a very interesting channel called Readers of the Lost Art, which I'm going to go on one day and talk about Genesis. Very interesting. And so could you please subscribe over on Readers of the Lost Art?
Can I give a quick plug, Ed? I'm quick plug. I'm doing a video that will be uploaded probably tomorrow on Greta Thunberg's ideology seen through the lens of Martin Heidegger. And that will be a riveting watch.
It will be.
I am sure that Greta Thunberg has seen through that lens many, many times and has bothered to read Isaac Dane, or whatever it's bloody called.
I'm trying to learn about Heidegger.
He
had a problem with Plato, didn't he? And I was watching a thing with Dugin the other day saying he's trying to reconcile Plato and Heidegger.
Heidegger
wanted to go back to the pre-Socratics.
With this book, it's called Heidegger for Beginners. It's Heidegger explained in a series of cartoons.
Oh, nice. That's about my level.
I bought it around 1997 and got bored of it. There's Sartre there, look at the pipe. So
talk about dysgenic. I mean, Sartre's whole philosophy was based on the fact that he was just really ugly. That's my theory on Sartre.
I don't trust men with sticking out ears or squints or just don't.
Mine are very small.
Finished the middle bit, Lipton.
Yeah, Heidegger, you wrote a book.
No.
It's a rare book.
No. I'm not being racist or anything, but no.
Okay? You sound like Ben Kingsley in Sexy Beast. No.
I have told you not to interrupt in the middle bit. Right, and then next of all we have Nick Dixon, who has... Nick, where can people find you online?
Well, I've got my YouTube channel, which is just Nick Dixon. All my extra stuff's on nickdixon.net. My Twitter is now just at Nick Dixon. So all those places, please subscribe to my YouTube channel, if nothing else, because it's not as big as Ed's. That's the only thing that's not as big, but it's just my YouTube channel. If you could subscribe to that, that would be nice.
And then finally, we have Lipton Matthews, and his channel is Lipton Matthews, and he gets all kinds of interesting people on his channel because of black privilege and all that kind of thing. So please subscribe over there. Right now, where were we? The poem. We have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic Public House, Mr. Quinn, and he has written the following poem for your delectation and delight, which we haven't actually got on the topic of yet. In Derby, it's sadly been shown, some cars have a mind of their own, attacking at random, often in tandem with a nutter who might be homegrown. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn. And if you like Mr. Quinn's book of poetry, then you can buy his book of Jolly Heretic Poetry, which is available on Amazon. And also remember to buy my new book, The Quaker Question, which is available on Amazon and also from the publisher Wiflings. Now, we have two super chats before we move on. The first is from Richard Hesketh, and he says, who is Richard Coldenhove Kalergi? But don't know. I've heard of the Kalergi plan, so I assume it relates to him. And that's, of course, the idea that you make the West into a multicultural country and that it's part of a deliberate plan. I've said today in an interview on a thing called Amazing Academics, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's more organic. And then we have Klaus Hero 9866, who says, Ed, when is your speech on Finnish people you did 21 of this month be released online? I've absolutely no idea. I hope it isn't, because I did it in Finnish and I probably sounded very silly. But I imagine it will be released online at some point, so everyone can mock my Finnish, because I've been here 21 years, but I hardly ever practice it, because frankly, Finns all speak English these days, and so there's never any reason to, unless you're doing a speech for a group of Finnish nationalists. Okay, where were we? We got sidetracked. We were on impressions of Jordan Peterson. There was something else we had to talk about. Oh, yes, Lipton, you wanted to talk about the greatest crime in the history of humanity.
Yes.
The greatest
crime against humanity, the transatlantic slave trade. That is not true.
You are descended from people that were enslaved in that slave trade, though, aren't you?
What did you say, Ed?
You are descended both from people that bought slaves in that slave trade and people that were slaves in that slave trade. So you have quite a good... Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
To see both sides.
There were several slave trades. There were the German market trades, the Eastern European slave trades, the Vikings and their trades. We don't have comparable data on earlier trade, so therefore we cannot make a comparison. But what we do know is that resources were galvanized to suppress the transatlantic slave trade. Therefore, by that logic, the transatlantic slave trade cannot be the gravest crime against humanity, because suppressing the transatlantic slave trade saved lives. So it can't be the greatest crime against humanity, whereas the other slave trades were more enable, people were less likely to want them to be abolished, and they would have been, they, if we had access to those numbers based on fatality rates, then we'd be in a better position to make the judgment. But based on what we do know, the transatlantic slave trade cannot be the gravest crime against humanity.
They looked at the standard of living of slaves on these plantations in terms of the amount of days off they got and what kind of food they ate and stuff like that, work they had to do. And actually, the standard of living was rather higher than my working class shepherd Dorset ancestors in the 19th century or Nick's.
Well, let me say this.
My parents, my family in Lancashire, because they say, Douglas Murray always says, someone working in the Lancashire cotton mills, which was half my family, had a lower life expectancy than a slave at the height of transatlantic slavery.
Well, also, I think of the Welsh slate mines. The Welsh slate mines. Imagine working in one of those.
In the 1960s.
Murray, because Nick, the Douglas Murray impression that I've developed is... So you mean that you have never allowed a person from Palestine to penetrate you anally? I always make a point of ensuring that I've been anally penetrated by at least one person.
I could do. You've never been? Yeah, that's good.
He's not Welsh. Yeah.
No, I was about to say that David Eltis is a leading academic, and he published a book. I read it last year. I like the book so much that probably I wrote around three reviews. Yes, I wrote one for an academic journal and one for another publication and one for the National Association of Scholars, because I just love the book so much.
Yes.
But David Eltis, in an article published maybe in the 80s or the early 90s, I read it, he said that when you look at the data, people in Nigeria in the 1960s, their material consumption was worse than slaves.
Yeah, than American slaves.
Yeah, in the 19th century. So you're looking at 1960s to the 19th century, and the people in Nigeria in the 1960s, their consumption patterns were less impressive relative to the slaves.
Right, and it begs the question as well. So people say, "Oh, yeah, but they had this awful feeling that they weren't free, and wasn't that a terrible feeling to have?" But then, when they interviewed slaves in the 30s that were born slaves and were slaves until they were, 10 years old or something like that, they remembered it quite fondly, and they thought that slave time was basically better, and their standard of living was better, and it was just better.
Based on the reports I read, many of them did not enjoy being slaves. They disliked it, but they also said that freedom was quite the burden. They didn't appreciate the contours of freedom either. It was stressful, and some people said, oh, my masters in during slavery were nice people, they weren't bad, but freedom was a burden for many of them because they had to work for themselves. They could not depend on the plantation, and it was tough.
Mm. We've heard Jesse Lee Peterson saying that segregation was better, and he grew up on a plantation. He always says it was better, and even though they were segregated in Alabama, he said, it was fine, it was better. Thought that was always interesting.
Why was it better?
For business. Black businesses were supported by black people. Desegregation made the economy more competitive, so many of the black businesses, they folded. That's one reason.
Interesting. Jesse Peterson just says that those times were better, and he doesn't say segregation was actually better. He just said it didn't really bother them, they didn't notice, and it's been exaggerated and stuff. That's always his take.
Well, yeah, read the, I'm sure you have, the erotic classic, The Story of O?
No, I haven't. I've got it on off DVD upstairs.
Well, hardly counts. It's a pretty pervy, erotic S&M type. It's like 50 Shades of Grey, but well written and much more extreme. But there's a foreword or a preface in that book that mentions a slave owner. He was, when they released all the slaves and freed them, he obviously went along with the law, and the slaves went to him, asked to be taken back into slavery. He refused, so they lynched him.
So they lynched him
for not taking them back, because psychologically there's a deeper point about the comfort of not having to face freedom, which then it goes into a perverted erotic classic. But that's the intro is all about the psychology of being dominated, which I thought you might be quite interested in.
Yeah, I think Welbeck references it in Submission, doesn't he? His seminal novel about the idea of Islam taking over France. He mentions Story of O as a sort of, he ties together the idea of submission at the end of the book. Anyway, sorry, that's just me chucking in a literary reference to try and keep up, because I haven't actually read the original.
Well, yeah, fair enough, but is that the idea? So is it actually that English girls are attracted to Muslim men because they're offering them submission?
He doesn't go with that. He at the end of the book sort of suggests that submission is in some way this sort of spiritual act, and perhaps like on some level that's what people want to do. But he's making an analogy between sexual submission and the submission of the entire state of France. But yeah, I have to reread that section. It's a great bit. It's a great book. Actually, I'm hoping to talk about it on my channel with Simon Evans. But yeah, it's a great book. But anyway, sorry.
Well, thinking one in thing woke culture, masochism's underexplored as a psychological motivator,
right?
I'm sure.
That is something, I'm not going to just shoehorn in my Peterson again, but that is actually something Peterson speculated, that a lot of the sort of lefty women, maybe on some level, he sort of hinted at it because he knew it was sort of a controversial idea. On some level, maybe that is the attraction to Islam. He was suggesting in a dark, shadow, Jungian way.
I'm trying to make a slightly less provocative point and just say in general, the whole notion of woke ideology, they seem to want to outdo each other for being more and more self-hating and virtuous and slagging off their own history, blah, de, blah, de, blah.
Yeah.
And it becomes quite masochistically enjoyable to see how far you can go.
Is that a sort of post-Christian impulse or what? Some people say that's the Christian aspect, Christian heresy.
Yeah, it's like, I know Ed has done this for a fact, but it's like self-flagellation. It is this, you get a feeling of catharsis, whether it's physical, psychological. Over to you, Ed. I'm fascinated on your insights.
I feel like you've been set up there.
I'm afraid the public schoolboy among our number is no longer here.
Who was that?
It's probably Lipson's got dog. Have you got dog, Lipson?
I'm saying, who was the public schoolboy?
No, we used to have a chap on this channel that went to public school, but he's not on here.
Oh, we've purged them all. Yeah, I'm comprehensive, mate. That's why I've not read anything.
That's all. We're all. Well, I don't know about Lipton. Lipton probably went to some posh school in Jamaica.
Yes, I did. I went to a prep school for a while, then to a primary school, and then to a really exceptional high school.
Well done you. Is that your dog, Paul?
Lipton, is that noise?
Oh, it's a dog. No, outside. My dog's all right. Some random
Lipton,
person's
it's your,
outside.
Lipton doesn't get on with dogs. They bark at him whenever they see him, even through the window. Yeah. They just start barking.
It's Lipton's Thai dinner. It just hasn't been cooked yet.
That's what I'm saying. Cultural difference, you see. How are you going to get around that?
Exactly. How are you going to get Lipton's hatred of dogs?
I don't like dogs.
No, I don't see why anyone would not like dogs. Dogs are lovely. Unless they're noisy, then they're not so lovely. Anyway, yes. Yes, it could be that it's a kind of... we move towards a more female-dominated society. It's the most shrill, mentally unstable women that are going to be the loudest and whatever in that society. And they may have a penchant for a kind of masochism. And so they culturally self-flagellate and just go on about how terrible they are. And you get that thing, like in Black Lives Matter, six years ago, in Lahti, where I was recently, you had about 100 young girls, and they were all young girls, campaigning BLM in Finland, in a town that's like 99% white. And just throwing themselves prostrate on the ground, lying on the ground.
It's not gender specific. Woke men do it all the time.
Yeah, but
maybe
well,
not
I think
the
woke,
same form.
With woke men, isn't it just basically a strategy to pull woke birds? They realise, how can I get a woke bird? I'll pretend I'm left wing and I care about women and stuff like that. And so they get a woke girl. Isn't
again, I defer to your better experience, but I wouldn't have thought so. No, I don't think that's the main driver. It might be a byproduct.
There's
wouldn't
a different,
you accept
but related...
the general idea that...
Sorry,
Nick, go on.
No, I was just going to say there's a different but related phenomenon, which is the woke girls actually wanting to go out with a Trump voter. This happened for a bit. You saw these blogs like, oh, I like this Trump guy and I feel guilty, you know, because they're sort of more alpha or whatever. And then there's that thing where, you know, it's more and more attractive women were suddenly okay with having like the MAGA hat. And I call it the ovary window, which I need to do more on because it's one of my great neologisms. The ovary, which is when it starts to become acceptable for women to take on more right-wing views or views that were previously, you know, verboten. I noticed it was Susanna Reid, whatever she's called, on the telly was suddenly saying something quite pro-immigration. I'm like, the ovary window's shifting to where it's... So when you see hot girls like wearing MAGA hats, you're like, oh, this is now the new mainstream. But that's a slightly different point from, of course, the self-flagellation, just reminding me of it.
But often, I don't know if you've found this, Nick, but often I find that girls that are involved in, you know, the right wing or the far right or whatever, that are generally completely mental.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like much more mental than girls that are just mainstream.
Yeah, so, partly to be an e-girl in general.
But not as much.
Because you have to be, because how many hurdles you have to overcome? It's sort of like to be involved in something so, you know, disagreeable as a woman, you have to, so many hurdles you have to overcome. So you have to be properly psychotic, don't you really? And also, yeah, I think there's definitely something in that. And also just to be an e-girl and you want all that attention and be online, inherently unhealthy. It's probably unhealthy for men as well, to be honest.
There was an interesting paper. It was quite about 20 years ago on narcissism in public figures and actors and whatever and things like this, and it found that of course actors or famous people in general are higher in narcissism than the general population, but the women are even higher than the men.
I went out with an actress. She had extremely high narcissism and psychopathy on the dark triad test and some Machiavellianism as well. I had basically zero trace, nothing on psychopathy and Machiavellianism, you'll be pleased to know. Narcissism a little bit, about it was like a little high, but lower, probably not even as high as average. So I came out lighter than ordinary people, like Maltesers, I was lighter than ordinary people. So that's just reassuring for anyone here. So I noticed you were calling Andrew Gold a psychopath the other day, Ed.
Well, that was a joke, though. Was it? No, I think there's a degree to which anybody that we find in these circles that we move in, these kind of e-celeb, whatever, far-right circles, is probably, because you've got to be a bit disagreeable and so forth, and so they're probably going to be a bit elevated in psychopathic traits. I'm not saying they're full-on psychopaths, but they're going to be a bit elevated in it. Yeah. And then you will find some people in these circles that are just complete narcissists and psychopaths.
And I'm not, which is why I've not done better, because to be like a kind of Constantine Andrew Gold type level, you have to have a little bit of that ruthlessness. I don't really have it. I'm not that disagreeable or a psychopath. That's probably why I've not done better. You know, I mean, don't do as those channels do work really well, don't they? Because they get that, they have that ruthless quality. Just a theory.
The one thing I've noticed about Andrew Gold, though, is that he's slightly disingenuous because he's an English Lit graduate and he's a bright guy, but he's incredibly anti-intellectual. He uses his intelligence, but doesn't actually seem to like education.
Yeah, but he went to Leeds. So, I mean...
Yeah, exactly. No, but
he downplays it every chance he gets.
I definitely went to Leeds University.
There's no human being I dislike more than the influencer.
He means you,
I
Ed.
Hate influencers. I think they're disgusting. I'm not an influencer.
Yeah, but Ed is an influencer.
No, I'm a speaker. I'm an eccentric writer. I'm not an influencer. What I am more in 1950s than 2025.
I've published loads of books, and I dress in a fake.
I hate jacket. Influencers. No, we should all go back to the days when academics just wrote books and appeared on cable news every now and then.
You can't do that, but you don't understand publishing. How it used to work is you'd go to a publisher and say, I've got a brilliant idea for a book, and then you'd become well-known on the basis of your book, right? Whereas if you go to a publisher now, they're like, well, who are you? What's your media presence? What's your Twitter? How many Twitter
exactly. We should go back to the days when we only listened to people who went to school.
It doesn't work like that. Like the
that's how it should work. That's how it should work.
If you were to get an agent who will take your book to a big publisher, you've got to already be an influencer.
No, I hate influencers. We need to go back to the days when the only people on TV were people like George Will.
Like Sam Melia. You know Sam Melia, Lipton, who went to prison for stickers that were perfectly legal, but his intention was questioned, and so he had to go to jail for a year. So, His newly published memoir, his newly published prison memoir, is currently the best-selling political memoir. Doing better than Churchill. Doing better than John Major. Even though John Major goes into a lot more detail about his youthful sexual exploits than Sam even thinks to do. But he's an influencer, and thus he's able to get a successful book. That's the way it works now.
My book will be published soon, and when it's published, I will only speak to other to professors. I will not go on online because I hate influencers. I hate them.
Well, I appreciate the elitism. I like it.
I am elitist. Like, I'm literally elitist.
So Lipton, have Imperium Press now accepted your book on blacks?
Not yet. They just said considered. So we haven't heard back from them yet.
No, I'm going to write to them.
I don't know.
Would you like me to write to them? Because I'm the author of one of their most successful selling books.
Yeah, because interestingly, I gave my book, I uploaded the book to ChatGPT, and he said, this book is good, but nobody will publish it. It's too edgy. Seriously, that's what it said.
No, that's no good. I'll get in touch with them. They've just asked me to do a dust jacket quote for one of their books. Okay. So I'll say, look, come on, Lipton's book on blacks.
Yeah, lots of people are expecting it. I've sent it to a lot of research. A lot of people are expecting it to be published.
I don't know what's going on there. I will look into it for you. I will. Because I'm the author of their, one of their best-selling books. Like, me and Neva both.
Yeah. So, woke eugenics.
No, Jonathan Bowden.
Oh yeah, yes. I've read that one. We did an interview on it.
That's the one that we did. That's the one that so we're doing is on the Quaker question on Thursday.
Hopefully that'll be out next Monday. Someone is just saying, right-wing woman is saying, gosh, you boys are being really charming to us women on the right tonight. I just want to clarify, it's not women on the right, it's just eagle women influencers who then turn out to be centrist when they get in too much trouble and they go woke, like Ashley St. Clair. So we don't mean you.
Yeah, or Lauren Southern. We don't mean you. If we haven't heard of you, we probably don't mean you. Like, we had a right-wing girl on last week, right, Birdie. She did what you're supposed to do. She got involved in right-wing circles, does a bit of podcasting, finds herself a nice bloke.
And shut up.
And then retire. And then, then we're talking. As they used to say at school lunch when I was in primary school. Dinner lady goat lovers. Okay, no more talking. And that was it. No more talking.
Just Ed doing that to women. Okay, no more talking. All right, that's honourable. It's honourable.
It's honourable. She said that she doesn't vote. She just sends her husband to vote for her. That's just base. That's how it should be. What do you think, Paul?
What was the question?
I don't know. I was just bringing you in because you've sat there silently for a while in vacant or in pensive mood.
No, I had nothing to add. Are we going to talk about the fat weld?
Oh, yeah, it's gone. Good point. So, chaps... we haven't talked about Derby yet, but then why should we?
Yeah, I was told we were talking about Derby. I mean, Ed didn't even tell me the topics, which is very hard for someone with high conscientiousness. He did it to torture me. But I thought we were talking about Derby. But I'm happy to talk about.
We've got 20 minutes. Let's talk briefly about Derby. So yes, Derby, a local Derby man who's 36 years old and lives in Derby, but is kind of from India, seems to have driven a car into a crowd, injuring 7 people. I'm thinking it's not the sign of a healthy state or a healthy city or a healthy country.
I just want to make one brief point on it, and then I'll let anyone go for as long as they want, which is just, I saw a tweet of people going, ha ha, gammons, they're saying it's a Muslim, but it's actually not. One thing is, like, it could be, because it's a lot of Muslims in India. I don't know if we know that yet, but there's actually people online that think that's, like, ha ha, up yours, gammons. It's like, no, but it's immigration, isn't it? It's still immigration, so we still win, if you want to, on our point, yeah. But there is also a case, I can see why they would say that, because there is a type of person who I saw a very good tweet describing them as liberals who hate Muslims. There is that group that's like, they're very happy with all other types of immigration except that one type. So I can see why someone would end up thinking that that's a win. But to me, the problem is immigration, even if it wasn't even intentional, and it's a question of terrible driving because people from other countries don't have the same driving standards, it's still a win for the anti-immigration position, whatever they are. So that's my point.
We should
hate everyone in a widespread way, not just one target group. Go on, Ed.
Yeah, well, I just think it's not about winning or losing. It's about the truth. And the truth is that it's not a British person. And so he needn't necessarily be here. And he's crashed into a load of people, whether deliberately or not. So it needn't have happened. It needn't have occurred. It did occur. It wouldn't have occurred. So I don't care. I don't care what his motive was. And anyway, India is about 20% Muslim. In fact, when I was in India, admittedly northern India, I was shocked by just how Muslim it was. So particularly the Taj Mahal is a mosque. And the area around it, Agra, is substantially Muslim, and that's India. It's not Pakistan. Not everybody left. Not they didn't all leave. So bollocks to it. So I just hopefully though we won't have this attack anymore because petrol prices will go through the roof. And I've always felt that driving around in motor cars is the height of ignorance. In the Netherlands, petrol has doubled. Has just basically overnight.
You and Peter Hitchens want the no car paradise.
Well, yeah, I mean they've got rationing in Slovenia, so you're rationed to 50 liters per day, 200 liters if you're a farmer. And in the Netherlands, it's gone it's now 2.10 a litre, and it's gone from being 90 cents a litre to 2.10 a litre.
Well, that's where we're going to go with Ed Miliband's policies plus all these wars. That's where we'll end up.
I mean, yeah.
Ed, I have a question a statement. I have the most contentious idea in the history of the world. Depopulation is not bad.
No, it's not.
It isn't. It's not bad. It's actually quite good.
If you don't have immigration, it is. There's no problem with declining birth rates. If you got, I mean, sorry to cut in, but this is what Larry Fink even said, you know, from CEO of BlackRock. He said the countries that have had xenophobic immigration policies will fare better with the increase of AI and robotics because there'll be less sort of useless people around taking up jobs. So there's nothing wrong with declining population as long as you don't then import loads of people at the same time, which is what we're doing.
No. Depopulation was used as an excuse to flood the West with immigrants. But many of the studies that I've read show that depopulation is really a benefit and not a liability.
It is a benefit,
especially for a rich country.
The population of England was 55 million in 1975. Britain, 55 million. It's now, 70 million that we know of? It's probably way more than that. And what benefit does it bring? It brings absolutely none. A very small amount of immigration. I can see the point. When I was a kid and I'd go to Winchester because my grandparents were from there, it didn't have an Indian restaurant. And I liked Indian food. And then in about 1992 or something, an Indian restaurant opened there. But that's it. That's all you need. You just need one if you like Indian food. That's it.
No, you don't even need that. It's your weakness for foreign food, Ed, has got you selling our country out. You're always going for foreign slop. And I'm always saying no to the slop.
Yes, I know. I know. Once I invited 2 years ago, Nick to come to dinner with me, another comedian and various other people. And he refused to come because it was Indian takeaway.
Correct.
In the restaurant. The only time I've been for dinner with Nick was fish and chips.
Fish and chips, you see. I live it every day. I'm not a fake influencer. I just live by these principles. My stomach couldn't take Indian, nor could my principles. Sorry. I'll stop talking because I think you want to talk about something to do with the Welsh as well, Paul. I don't want to derail it. Or more on Derby, or more on depopulation.
Are we allowed to? Well, this is the Derby thing. No, I was going to say the Derby thing. There's not an awful lot to say because the rhetorical sleight of hand that is now always occurring is if you point out one negative incident, they say you're tarring all immigrants with the same brush. And it's not, because they won't provide the statistics whereby you could do a proper proportional analysis of crimes and harm against people. So all you can do is, you know, casual empiricism and anecdotal evidence off the news. But it's pretty obvious there's a disproportionate impact upon people from certain immigrant groups. And whatever you say, the media aren't going to cover it. They're not going to discuss it, you know, without being disingenuous, and on it goes. My rhetorical question would be, how many events have to occur? Well, just think about Manchester Arena. You had the nauseating sight of everyone in Manchester was at St. Peter's Square singing Don't Look Back in anger, when the very thing they should have been was pissed off and angry.
But then they'd be far-right thugs. They would be literally called far-right thugs by the Prime Minister
This is my point about masochism. It's at what point do you just accept people are in a masochistic death loop? They'd rather be masochistically virtue-signalling than actually address the problems that surround us.
Yeah, the sort of bookend of that, though, was Gary Neville, after the synagogue attack, blaming it on white middle-aged men, and everyone hated that. So I feel like from Don't Look Back in Anger, the feeling had moved to the point where, like, shut up, Gary Neville, you idiot. So I do think it's moving. I mean, you're absolutely right in general, but I do wonder if finally people are sick of that.
I think people...
Then you've got the mismatch, because I'm a massive football fan, but it's, and I really begrudge cancelling my subscription to watch Premier League football. But, you know, rainbow shoelaces, constant taking the knee, all of these things that have nothing to do with football.
Yeah, and the commentary.
When I was at school, I was the kid with cerebral palsy who couldn't play football and wasn't interested in football. And people would come up and say, "What football team do you support?" And I'd say, "I don't like football." Football embodied everything I hated about England. And my best friends were Saad and Yusuf. And I went to a party once where I was the only non, it was all boys, obviously, even though it was a mixed school. And I was the only non-Muslim. And that was a big part of my life. And then sadly, Yusuf and his brother Muhammad, next time I saw them, I was about 19, and they had big fuck off Old Testament beards, had married foreign women, and now they live in Tanzania and are doctors, and absolute fundamentalist Muslims of the most extreme kind. And then now those football English people that I hated when I was a kid, I kind of more identify with.
They're your audience now.
Can I slightly disagree with your point about the window shifted because Gary Neville got some in the neck? If you remember back to the recent Leeds game, they let the Muslim players take water the minute sundown happened. And initially the Leeds fans booed and there was a big hoo-ha. And the next time the Leeds fans did nothing. But no one pointed out there was about 8 minutes to go to half-time. There's absolutely no reason why they had to stop. But it's this virtue signalling from the authorities. But my point is, if the resentment, the anti-Gary Neville type attitudes is strong, as you said, why did the football fans then immediately obey the authorities when they were told not to boo the next time? There's no resistance. There's no one saying enough's enough.
I know. I see what you mean. And I remember this tweet from Leeds after, which was pathetic, telling everyone what to think. Yeah, so there's definitely wokeness in the clubs. I just did a piece on Ipswich apologising for having Nigel Farage visit. Mm. And it's pathetic. There was about this pathetic statement. It was where inclusive and diverse and welcoming. And Man United, after Jim Ratcliffe said that we were being colonised by immigrants, put out a statement saying we've always been about diversity, equity and inclusion. So they have to put out the woke mantra as soon as this happens. So the football clubs are incredibly woke. And Ipswich, at the same time, said they were apolitical, which is laughable because the apology itself was political, as was the statement. So you're absolutely right. And I'm like you, I sort of reluctantly still watch it because it's the only thing I can talk to my family about that isn't controversial, where we won't fall out, particularly falling out with my brother over Trump and things like this. But because he's part of the blob and is very, you know, full on, you know, remain a blob person. But
hey, Nick, bro, hello.
But you're absolutely right that it is pathetic. But the fact that the Leeds fans did do that, I thought was, I'm not saying it's there yet, but I'm saying green shoots, the fact that people hated Neville, the fact that the Leeds fans did do that, the fact that all the fans hate the knee, not all of them, but there's always, you know, people try and ruin the taking of the knee and they boo. Now, against that is the clubs themselves and is that kind of instinctive leftism of perhaps I could say Liverpool and certainly Manchester as well, which is this, I've noticed it on the football fan channels, a kind of instinctive sort of low IQ left. And I used to watch these Man United fan channels and they're so annoying after the Ratcliffe thing. They were saying all the talking points that were like, what about us? We colonize people. No, no, Nigel Farage isn't smart, you know, which Ratcliffe had said he was an intelligent person. It was very low level talking points. And I'm like, really, guys, we deserve to be colonized now. It's like, are you in favor of colonization
there's
or not?
It was like a certain kind of insecure working class person that deals with it and makes themselves feel that they're better than other working class people by signaling the views of higher class people. Yeah.
Right. They've been inculcated with these views and sort of brainwashed. And it is really sad because football used to be a working class sport. My granddad said, you know, my granddad could see this coming years ago. He said the only sport worth watching these days is darts. He was ahead of his time with that one. And he stopped watching football because he thought it had gone wrong then. So you're right, Paul. I mean, there's some pushback, but there's still this overwhelming, instinctive, normie accepting the current doctrine of the fans and the clubs themselves are unbelievably woke. And they even did the call to prayer thing or some sort of Muslim thing in Old Trafford a couple of weeks ago. I was like, what is
even
that?
Even with darts, though, with darts, they got, during the Black Lives Matter insanity thing or a bit before that, they got rid of the dolly birds. It used to be that pretty girls would walk the darts.
The darts girls, yeah. Because basically feminists who are not attractive didn't want them to do it.
Exactly. And
oh,
then
there's one called Daniela. Oh.
And then they have female commentators these days, which is ridiculous because female darts. Okay, it's the PDC allows in. There's that guy Fallon Sharrock or something from Milton Keynes that's occasionally got into the playoffs. It is a woman.
That's a bad example because darts, fundamentally, it's the same game. Women just aren't as good at it for whatever reason. You could argue till the cows come home. No, but listen a sec. Yeah. But ultimately, the mechanics do not really change. But football, for example, or rugby, or cricket even, are such fundamentally different games between the two different genders because of the speed and power difference. It doesn't matter if you can lob a dart at a board as hard as you can. It doesn't help you score high. Whereas in football, the strength and the absolute power and the different physiology make them effectively different sports.
So
to any
sports.
Female striker talking about, I scored such and such a goal, yeah, you weren't faced with a 6'7" male goalkeeper. You had a 4'5" Ken Dodd stooge, you know, diddy woman in a goal and you managed to score an easy goal. It's not the same game.
Yes. And they should make the goals smaller, but doing so would be them conceding that it's a different sport. So they won't do it. The whole of women's football.
Or
is
give
just
the goalie
step
ladders, but do something sensible.
Step ladders. Yeah.
Oh, they should.
It's a woke psyop. The whole women's football is a woke psyop. Go on, Lipton. Sorry.
My turn. I don't know why people have been obscuring this particular finding in research, but it appears that white men could be the least troublesome group in society. White men, and this is data from America. White men, they are less likely to be. Let me continue, please. White men, they are more likely to repay student loans. White men are more likely to be high quality entrepreneurs. They're less likely to believe fake news. Most incels are not white. They're minorities and they're not right-wing. So apparently white men could be the most productive group in society and the least inefficient.
I'm not going to disagree with you, Lipson. That's a very good point that you make, and you're unbiased because you're black. So
seriously, but women believe fake news. They could be a real problem.
We just need to talk quickly about Blaenau Gwent. So Blaenau Gwent is the fattest county. I don't even know where that is, but I believe Neil Kinnock may have been the MP for it. Is the fattest county in England? In Britain.
In Wales,
80% of people there are overweight, and I don't know, like 40% are obese or something. Have you been to Blaenau Gwent, Paul?
I've probably been near it. I haven't been to it. No.
Well, what like towns are in this Blaenau Gwent place?
Well, there aren't many towns.
Where is it?
I thought it was in the north, but someone needs to look it up for me.
Where's Merthyr Tydfil? Is that in there, Merthyr Tydfil? I don't know, but apparently it's Keith Chegwin's died. Apparently, that's sad. I liked Keith Chegwin. R.I.P. Keith Chegwin.
Oh no.
Where is Academic Agent from? says, let's assume Blaenau Gwent for the sake of argument, should be 4-4-4. Lipton, where's Blaenau Gwent? What town's in Blaenau Gwent?
I don't even know.
Lipton, you live in Wales. This is outrageous.
Keith Chegwin died ages ago.
Yeah, everyone's saying R.I.P. Chegwin, but he...
Yeah, I thought he did. Yeah, he died in 2017. I thought that. Yeah, 2017. I thought he did.
Well, is he one of those people like Tony Hart? You know Tony Hart from Heartbeat that just keeps dying? Like, his obituary...
No, Keith Chegwin, he had a lot of Alzheimer's fans.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how Heartbeat guy and Chegwin, they keep dying. It's like Jesus in that respect. But, No, he didn't die anyway. He was Lipton, are you checking where Blaenau Gwent is, or are you just sodding about? What are you doing?
Man, look, search. I can't find. I don't know where it is.
Right, but anyway,
GWENT.
I assume that it's not a very high IQ area, and so the people have poor impulse control and they're very fat. I don't know what else there could be that would explain this Blaenau Gwent place. And unfortunately, we have two people on the panel that live in Wales, and they've never heard of it, or if they've. I assume we're onto a winner here, particularly as Paul was saying, let's change the subject to Blaenau Gwent. I thought we're onto a winner here. We're going to have all kinds of interesting insights. But neither of you know where it is. Neither
know Ed, but because your tism's so strong, you think the most important aspect of the story is the name of the place and the location, rather than the fact you have these obese, fat bastards waddling along, chafing their thighs. That's the important issue.
Okay, well, let's talk about that then. So, Paul, why is Blaenau Gwent so fat?
Why is it a problem? I just think, again, I'm going to be a crass Darwinian like you, Ed. People should be free to eat themselves to death. Why this nanny state? They're a drain. If fit and healthy people eventually are a massive drain on the NHS. This idea that fat and healthy people cost the NHS. They die early. If you hypothecate the costs across their lifetime, heavy smokers, heavy drinkers, morbidly obese people are winners to the NHS.
It is true. Exactly. What Sir Humphrey said, and I think it was yes, Prime Minister rather than yes, Minister. Smokers are national benefactors. They pay all this tax on their cigarettes and they voluntarily lay down their lives for their friends. I mean, think back to the 80s and what's going on now with people like my parents' generation. My mum, for example, is an only child, and my grandfather died at 86. That generation, they've made no plans for living to a very old age, because nobody did. Their parents were dead by the time they were 40, both of them. And normally that was the case. And now you have this generation where you get women that are often in their early 70s, that are elderly and retired themselves, and they're still having to look after their mothers that are in their mid-90s. Okay, that's the same boomer generation that's inherited loads of property and whatever, but it's not a particularly good situation. It's in fact one of the reasons why I chose to have two children rather than one, was watching what my mother had been through with her own mother, having to my mother herself retired, then being the sole legal carer for this very elderly lady. And these fatties,
do you think your kids are going to look after you? Is this the myth you tell yourself?
Well,
if you'd have had 10 kids, seriously, Ed, if you'd have had 10 kids, I wouldn't have betted on them looking after you. Any of them.
Well, probably my fans will look after me, won't you, chaps?
No, personally, I just want to be in control of Ed's books so I can manage his intellectual estate. That's the only thing I want.
I have no problem, Lipton, with employing you as my Jeeves from Jeeves and Worcester.
Nick, have you had children in order that they look after you?
No, I haven't. And sometimes I occasionally think, crikey, I'm just going to be looked after, inverted commas, by a sort of immigrant who hates me or a robot, depending on how long I last. So I do sometimes think about it. I think, my life's going to be becoming, it's already pretty atomized and bug man-esque, and it's only going to become more and more isolated. And I do sometimes think I've messed up there. But unfortunately, I'm too high in negative emotion to have managed to have a family. And I'm too neurotic, so it's not worked out for me.
Is to, assuming you've got a stash of money that's hived away, while you're still compos mentis, get a system whereby, ideally, an Eastern European svelte woman called Svetlana can get a direct debit when you hit the age of 80 onwards, So it's unhackable, cryptocurrency, whatever you want to do. She gets a certain payment as long as she looks after you. And you might have to pay someone else to check. Yeah, but you have to get someone else to check that she actually is looking after you and not scamming you. And then
if I'm going to be 80, she has to now be sort of a child, presumably, to be the right age by the time I'm that age.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'd have to find like a Polish child.
If you're watching any 11-year-old girls in Ukraine or Moldova.
Slovakia's good.
That's too rich. It's going to be a really poor country.
Okay.
Moldova, Transnistria, something like that. Get in touch with me.
You've got to get that sweet spot. They're going to be the right age, but that's tricky. That's a tricky business. I haven't thought of that. Got to find a child with potential, is what we're saying. Is this on YouTube?
In a Western country, at Derby University or some such place.
Think about this. Sometimes I think I should have been nicer to my nephews because I spent quite a lot of time with them, but then they were sort of quite ungrateful about some Christmas presents I got them and I didn't really go around anymore. And then I think, crikey, they could have been my only chance. So I do sometimes.
Well, no, Nick, you write a living will and make it clear to your nephews. Exactly. If they look after you, they get your house.
Nick, right. You shouldn't have brought your nephew's 12 Rules for Life by Jordan Peterson. You should have brought something else.
No, Nick, this is serious. Nick, you have a living will. Your nephews are going to look after you, and you pay. You also have a living will that, at today's prices, you will pay 20,000 quid to an independent third party to make sure the little scammers do look after you.
This is good thinking. I hadn't thought of it. I like this. Appeal to the cynical, yes, the pure. We had a weird situation where, should I even say that? I don't know. There's been will situations in my family that are quite upsetting. So, yeah. It's what people get very weird about money and wills. They become very strange. So you're right. Just the promise of that money could save me.
If they think you're going to... None of these Zoomers are ever going to afford a house. So
you're right.
You've got to go for the weak spot.
The only problem is I need some money. If I get some money. So I've not got money or family or friends. So I've messed it up somehow. But I've got a little bit saved because I've made some money at GB News and I've got a little chunk saved. So I can save that little chunk. It's not that much, but it's enough for a struggling Zoomer or Alpha, whatever the heck they're called, to sort of ruin their life looking after me.
I like GB News.
Do you?
Well, yes, I liked it when Nick was on it. I mean, Simon
thank you,
was on.
Ed. Very loyal. And
why can't you invite Ed? Why can't you encourage them to invite Ed?
Because they
people at GB News, and I'm too controversial to be invited on.
And
no,
also
you're
because,
not.
Because my show ended last June, and I'm not associated with it in any way now, and I don't want even try and get on there. So,
what happened? Were you fired?
The show ended. No, well, we were all fired because the show ended.
The show was funny, doing well.
They let the wrong person take it over, and it ruined it, and it ended. But I was relieved because it had become horrible to do. So I was fine, but it's less money, of course. But yeah, that's GB News. I never did. I was doing it a little bit, and then I stopped even bothering to ask. And I can't be bothered. I'm too probably out there for GB anyway. Now it's very much.
I want to go on GB News to talk about immigration.
Okay, well, you're asking the wrong guy, as we've just established. Good luck.
I can put you in touch with people that work for GB News that are friends of mine, but I can't guarantee they'll bring you on.
I am black.
Yeah, you're black privilege.
What's Nicola Lotus here? I do it every week, Green Fez. I do it every Friday, Lotus here. Yeah, Ed, could you get on Steve Eddington's alternative GB News, which sort of base people are allowed on?
Well, what's that called?
Well, Carl's been on it, and Josh Firm from Lotus here has even been on it. Where Steve Eddington does his own interviews on GB Originals. It's not on the telly, it's on the internet. So he just gets people on, and he likes to get politicians on and go, so what do you think about mass deportations and white demographics? And then they say something career-ending.
I know Steve. He's a good bloke. I loved his recent thing where he had this guy, this sort of typical working class, but a bit mental, a bit insecure, so he has to signal high status beliefs. And he
goes, that was great.
Yeah, well, it hasn't changed very much. And then as he says it, then a Muslim in a burqa just walks
past. Perfect. Perfect. I know. It's like, no, I haven't noticed. Yeah, it was. Whereas all the immigrants going, it's not safe. I hate it. There's no white people. That was a brilliant video. Great work. Yeah, he's good, Steve.
Okay, we're going to have to round up now. But Tommy 5023 is asking Nick to do some more impressions. I don't know, Nick, can you do Paul, me, and Lipton? Can you do that?
I can try to do you goodbye. That's about anyone can do Ed, can't they? It's you just go hello, hello. You just basically what you say. Hello, hello, hello. That's anyone can do that. I'll have to work on it properly at home. These don't just come spontaneously. You have to work on them. It's actually a pretty complicated process.
Can you do Steve Edgington?
Not really. It's quite a sort of non.
Yeah, it's quite generic, isn't it? That's the thing.
I can do is Jordan Peterson, a semi-decent Trump, a passable Starmer, and film director Werner Herzog. Those are the professionals.
I haven't heard Starmer.
Well, Star Wars, just having a go at it. I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's something like that. See, it's not amazing, but it's not one of my sort of official tier.
It's not amazing. Christopher Walken.
I don't know. I can't do Jordan Peterson. That's what you're exposing. I can only do Jordan Peterson, and the others are just sort of having a crack. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would imagine. I think Rory Bremner said that he found John Major really difficult because John Major was just so boring and.
It's just based on your own voice. For some reason, I've always been able to do that one. But then other ones just don't suit my voice. Yes, I can't do them. I mean, that guy's very good, isn't he? Who's the guy that Peter Hitchens hates? He's quite good.
But you've got to narrow it down.
We've not seen that. There's a guy that does a Peter Hitchens impression. He always does Peter Hitchens. It's like, well, of course you would say that because you have no idea about my work. And he does his impression, but Peter Hitchens hates it.
It's kind of like, yeah, it just sounds like Martin Amis.
Don't do it because he hates it. I always like the advent of central heating was essentially the end. But yeah, he hates it and he's spent like thousands of tweets attacking this guy. Have you not seen this? I'm amazed you haven't seen this.
No, I don't know who you're talking about, which impersonator you're talking about.
Well, I can't help you.
No, I had an argument on Twitter with Peter Hitchens over Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I was saying they were a jolly good idea because these people were getting a bit above themselves, so we needed to blow them up. And he to teach them a lesson, which I thought was quite reasonable. And he was basically American government policy at the time. And he was disagreeing. So
probably on ethical grounds, I imagine.
Oh, he had all kinds of civil grounds. A friend of mine at university, actually, his granddad was sublimated in Hiroshima. His granddad was on the way into work that day. The bomb was dropped and he was turned from a solid to a gas with no liquid state in between. At least you go quickly. The worst thing were the people that were on the outskirts of the that got terrible, terrible cancer. And
there's an American in Trump's administration. Is it, what's his name? Lutnick, is it? Who was the one time he took his kids to school was 9/11. Have you heard about that one?
No.
And he would have been in the World Trade Center. It was one day he took his kids to school. And some people say that's a bit dodgy or it's great luck.
I like the way Nick tries to end, despite Ed's efforts to end on a miserable note, Nick is trying to salvage a positive, upbeat final.
No, I did realize that. That Nick was about 5 minutes late, so I thought we've got three minutes late,
and Nima is always at least 15 late. So I thought we were on sort of like foreign time, but I didn't. I forgot Ed was English, properly English, and therefore would be on. Yeah, I said so many controversial things.
Lipton's on Tehran time. Okay, I don't operate on that. Okay,
I'm being paid. Why should I show up on time? I didn't get the topics really. I didn't get any preparation. I was asked yesterday. I'm not paid. I'm far too big for this. Why should I arrive on time?
Exactly. You're too big for a little show.
Thank
with
you.
A little man like Ed.
Lady Wax has been on this live stream. Curtis Yarvin.
Oh, Yarvin.
Sir Simon Baron Cohen. All kinds of interesting people.
But not Sacha Baron Cohen, because that's the big time.
That would be really big.
If you are so big, Ed, why are you not on that guy show? What's his name? The Bali guy. The Bali guy, Joe Rogan, yes.
I'm not. I was mentioned on it. There was a girl called Rachel Wilson, and she talked about me on the.
You mentioned me on Andrew Gold's show, which was nice. But Andrew just stared at you. Probably hates me. He just stared at you with hatred. I haven't said anything to him.
I don't know whether that's because he hates me or whether he just hates you or both.
I think he hates me. I think he thinks I'm part of the woke right. But Carl says he's all right, so therefore he's all right by me. But like, if he's all right with my friends, but he thinks I'm woke right, I think.
He maybe thinks I'm woke right. I don't know.
Well, yeah.
But anyway, let's round up now. So, okay, chat, I want to mention Ed's show. Okay, I'm going to mention my friend Tommy, and I don't know if I should mention his surname, but I'll mention my friend Tommy, and he lives in Oulu, and he's one of my best friends, and we drink beer together. So hello, Tommy. And hello to everybody in the Wheelwrights in Luton, if you're watching. Hello to Helena. Hello to people in the Wheelwrights in Luton. I hope you're doing okay. Very traditional English pub. Very into football, the Hatters, Luton, and so on. All right. Cheers, everybody. We'll see you all next week. Have a nice Easter. Remember, it's when Jesus died for us. And we will see you all soon. And goodbye.
Goodbye.